Frank's is a lot worse than yours, I think. Okay, so we're going to talk another chapter of God's People, Promise and Delivery. Just wanted to cover the timeline again. We all know it, but and this isn't all of it. We're kind of ending at the cross here. But in this series, we started with Abram, and his name was changed to Abraham. He had a son, Isaac, who had a son, Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel. And from that time, from the time of Abram on, we have the history of the Israelites. And one of the big events was with Moses, when he helped bring them out of Egypt, out of their slavery, and gave them the Old Testament, which was not just the Ten Commandments, but all the regulations and the rites and the rules that go with it. And Moses took them to the Promised Land, and they should have been there within a couple of months at the most. Only they, instead, they went through the wilderness for 40 years because they didn't have the faith to go into the Promised Land. God said He'd take care of it all. He'd protect them. He'd run off the enemies. But they went and looked and were scared. And except for two of them that were of age, Joshua and Caleb, the rest of them didn't want to go. And so the Lord turned them around, and they wandered in the wilderness for 40 years before they finally went back to going in again. Once Joshua took them into the Promised Land, then they went through a period of having judges over them and then kings. And during the kings, it was also prophets, although prophets started almost from the beginning. Moses was a prophet that prophesied about the Lord. So, but especially during the time of the kings, prophets were important because they were God's people. And the kings very much were not, except for David and maybe Solomon in the very beginning. The rest of the kings of Israel were mostly terrible. And so they had prophets there to warn them. And when that period of time was over, the last prophet, then there was a period of 400 years of silence before we get to the Gospels right here, which is where we're heading to study, is the Gospels themselves. So that's our timeline. Israel's earthly history is basically what our timeline's about. Abram received a promise, and that promise is an eternal promise. Moses brought down the law, and that law ends, that Old Testament law ends when the New Testament comes into effect for the Jews, which is a future event, although the cross made it possible. So, okay, where are we? All right, let's go to Genesis chapter 15. Israel is now a freed nation, you know, out of Egypt, with a God-appointed leader, who's Moses, extensive laws and divine guidance. And remember the prophecy to Abram, or to Abraham, Genesis chapter 15, verses 13 and 14, where he said unto Abram, "Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance." And that's exactly what happened, right? They ended up in Egypt, and they ended up slaves. And when it was over and the Lord brought them back out, they gave them gold and silver and all kinds of things, great substance. So as all of the prophecies that you see, they come true. So Moses brought them out with God's power, and they're ready to go into the Promised Land. And when I think about that, because look, we saw they didn't have a whole lot of faith, most of them, and they whined and cried every time things didn't go their way, but they did follow Moses out. I mean, that took some faith to follow him out. Are they ready to go into the Promised Land? Are they ready now to follow him in? And so again, when I think about that, I think about, are we ready to go into the Promised Land? I mean, for us, it's not land here on earth, but it's a complete change in our lives, and eventually a total transformation when He takes us out of here and takes us to heaven. But I'm talking about this time right down here, where we trust in the Lord and what He did for us. We receive the Holy Spirit, and we have a whole different direction. Most people that go through that, especially the way churches teach it these days, do that as a way to be forgiven by God and not go to hell. That's the main reason they do it, not to go in a whole new direction, especially a direction where there may be giants, like the Israelites were afraid of, Anak, or in our case, there may be ridicule, or we may start feeling more and more alone as we truly stand up for what we believe in. So the question is, are we ready to go into the promised land, or do we love Egypt too much? Do we want the exact same lives we had before we were saved, with just the assurance that we're saved now? Hey, Johnny. Do you see what I'm saying? Because that, to me, that's a real parallel to what they did, is they wanted that promised land, no doubt about it. But then they found out there may be some problems along the way, and they may have to keep depending on God instead of they just went in, they got it all, and that was it.
Let me move this over just a little.
I don't know how I keep moving that off. So let's go to Numbers chapter 13. Verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Send thou men that ye may search the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers shall ye send a man, every one a ruler among them. And Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All those men were heads of the children of Israel. Let's jump to verse 17. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, and said unto them, Get you up this way, southward, and go into the mountain, and see the land, what it is, and the people that dwelleth therein, whether they be strong or weak, few or many. And what the land is that they dwell in, whether it be good or bad, and what cities they be that they dwell in, whether in tents or in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, whether there be wood therein or not, and be ye of good courage, and bring of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and searched the land of the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, as men come to Hamath. Let's see. Okay, so you've got it again, is that they're getting a chance to check out this land that God has promised them. And then let's just go on to 13, verse 26. And they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and to all the congregation of the children of Israel and unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh, and brought back word unto them and unto all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. And they told him and said, We came unto the land whither thou sentest us, and surely it flowed with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. So I say, it's just like the Lord said, it's flowing with milk and honey. Nevertheless, today we use the word but, right? That's our word today. The people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. Moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites, and the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him said, We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, so we were in their sight. So what's the difference between how Caleb's looking at it and how they're looking at it? Faith. That's right. As far as Caleb is concerned, God promised it to us. Look what he's brought us through. Mm-hmm. He can do it. But as far as what they were looking at is, it's just us, and they're giants. We can't do it. So that's the difference. And that's how we get all out of shape and panic in this world when things seem a little tough, is we're thinking, how are we going to do it? Mm-hmm. Instead of, how's God going to do it? Don't they remember how God led them out of Egypt? They all witnessed His miraculous power displayed. Have they stopped trusting in Him? Even if He defeated the enemy for them, this new life would be for God's purpose and in His ways and not their own. That's part of what a lot of Christians don't understand. Wait, I just have to raise my hand, go up to the front, commit myself, and now I can go on living for my purpose, and God just took care of all my problems. That's how it's presented, you know, and He might even make me rich and give me a new car. Most people always count the cost of something. Will it benefit me? But in the case of how Christianity is presented to most people today, there's no cost. It's just all going to be easy. It's all going to be good. It's all, you're going to get everything that you want. But let's go. It's not in here. We'll go to Hebrews afterwards. But let's go to Philippians chapter 3 and see what Paul tells us about the cost. Chapter 3, verse 1. And this is Paul speaking to us. He says, "Finally, my brethren, rejoice in the Lord. To write the same thing to you, to me indeed, is not grievous, but for you it is safe. Beware of dogs, beware of evil workers, beware of the concision." And you remember who the concision are? They're the Jewish people that, in this case, don't believe in Christ. "For we are the circumcision, which worship God in the Spirit and rejoice in Christ Jesus and have no confidence in the flesh." Is that right? Is that what we are? Do we have no confidence in the flesh?
True.
Theoretically, we would all agree. The question is, on a daily basis, when we run into Enoch and his team, do we still feel the same way? You know, right? Paul says, "Though I might also have confidence in the flesh," which really means all kinds of earthly, worldly abilities and accomplishments, "if any other man thinketh that he has whereof he might trust in the flesh, I more." And it also includes religious accomplishments, which he's about to tell us. "Circumcised the eighth day of the stock of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of the Hebrews, as touching the law, a Pharisee. Concerning zeal, persecuting the church." He did that out of his zeal. "Touching the righteousness which is in the law, blameless." He did everything right, and if he did something wrong, he, on the Day of Atonement, he took his sacrifice. "But what things were gained to me, those I counted loss for Christ." I think these verses should be read in all these churches that tell people at a certain time, invite them up, raise your hand and become a Christian. They ought to go ahead and read this first, you know, because that's what Paul's saying. He's saying, "The things that were gained to me, I counted loss for Christ." And in a sense, that's exactly what you're going to do or you're going through in your lives little by little. The things that used to be important to you will become less and less important until they become more worthless, and the things that were worthless to you, which are all spiritual, things that you can't see, will become worth more and more and more as time passes. So he counted them loss for Christ. He says, "Yea, doubtless, and I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things." And let me just stop right there again. It seems to me that the way religion brings people to Christ is that they haven't suffered the loss of all things. They've just gained something. You know, it goes back to God is my co-pilot. Christ is my helper. I'm still in charge. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And He's just offered me some help whenever I need it. I can snap my fingers and He's going to come help me get it. So, but he says he suffered the loss of all things and do count them but dung that I may win Christ. I always love that word right there, dung, you know, because I spent so much of my life going after dung, just piling up a whole pile of dung, you know, which now I'm trying to get rid of. and be found in him, not having my own righteousness, which is of the law, but that which is through the faith of Christ, the righteousness which is of God by faith. And verse 10, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being made conformable unto his death. I'd like to just see all those people in every church today when they get them to come forward and all, for them to finish up with this prayer right here. You know, okay, now let's pray that we get to indulge in the fellowship of his sufferings, that we get to suffer a lot like him, and that we be made conformable unto his death. Because that's really how it's going to be. We're dying to this world right here, and that's just not being told at all, you know, is what the real thing is. And the exciting thing is, the more we die to this world, the more we have a life of joy, you know, and peace. So, but it's hard to say that to somebody that's not even a Christian yet, or a brand new one that just got it and thought what they were getting was a whole new bank account, and didn't realize there were some things to give up for that bank account. It's just dung. But we do have to give up the dung. So, okay, let's go back to Hebrews. I mean, forward to Hebrews chapter 3, verse 7. And we're back to talking about the Jews back there, where they were afraid of those giants and didn't have faith in God. Hebrews chapter 3, verse 7. Wherefore, as the Holy Ghost saith, today, if ye will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation in the day of temptation in the wilderness. And he's referring right back to that time that they were tempted whether to trust God or not to trust him. When your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. That's what they got to see, his works for 40 more years. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do alway err in their heart. They have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of bad works.
Unbelief.
Right, an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. Now, there's something real different about them and us, is that they lost their promised land. And we, if we have truly believed, won't lose our promised land. But boy, we will have a miserable time here on this earth if we're not trusting in the Lord. Because otherwise, we're back to dealing with the giants and thinking that's all there is to it. And all these terrible things that happen will feel terrible. The other way is we can say, well, I guess this is some of the suffering that I have to, that I will do with the Lord. And he's going to use it to grow me. And it just helps change our whole attitude. But he says they'll not enter into my rest. That's what the Lord says about them. Why would he say that? Doesn't he care about them? Let's go to Numbers chapter 14. Numbers chapter 14, verses 1 and 2. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept all night. And the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them, would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we had died in the wilderness? And guess what? They died in the wilderness. And then verses 4 to 8. And they said to one another, let's make a captain and let us return into Egypt. In other words, let's get a new captain, throw Moses off and return into Egypt. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, which were of them that searched the land, rent their clothes or tore them. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Lord delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which floweth with milk and honey. But they didn't trust in God. They didn't trust in the mighty God that had brought them out of Egypt with all this power and miracles. They were afraid to go in, so they turned back. Let's go, still chapter 14, verse 22. Because all these men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, and have tempted me now these 10 times, and have not hearkened to my voice, surely shall they not see the land which I swear unto their fathers, neither shall any of them that provoked me see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, and hath followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. That doesn't leave out Joshua, as we're going to see, but that he mentions Caleb right there. So then verse 29, your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you according to your whole number, from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me, doubtless ye shall not come into the land concerning which I swear to make you dwell in, save Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. But your little ones, which he said should be a prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have despised. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in the wilderness, and your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years, and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness.
No salvation for non-believers.
No salvation for non-believers. And there's something else that's kind of interesting there. We're always talking these days about what's the age of accountability. Yeah. Well, then it was 20. Yeah, he counted anybody that was 20 and above that refused to go in, he counted as accountable for what they did. But 19 and under, he didn't. Mm-hmm. So that was what it was then. So, and the 40 years of wandering wasn't to get to the promised land, but was after they had turned back because they didn't have enough faith to go in. Remember what they had been told earlier. Let's go to Leviticus. Oops. Leviticus 26. Starting at verse 3. The Lord said to them, to the Israelites, if ye walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and ye shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. And I will give peace in the land, and ye shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither shall the sword go through your land. And ye shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. By the way, is that happening, what he prophesied there in Israel, right now? Are they safe in the land? Not at all, right? That's not what's going on. They certainly don't trust in the Lord at this time. Let's see, where was I? They shall fall before you with the sword, verse 8. And 5 of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. So again, he's letting them know, when God is with you, you don't have to worry about how many there are. For I will have respect unto you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you. And so let's go from there to chapter 2, verse 1. No, where am I? Let me go on. I still have to go on, don't I? So, and ye shall eat old store, and bring forth the old because of the new. And I will set my tabernacle among you, and my soul shall not abhor you. And I will walk among you, and will be your God, and ye shall be my people. I am the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, that ye should not be their bondmen, and I have broken the bands of your yoke and made you upright. But listen to that. That's the same thing that happens to us in a sense. He breaks the bonds of sin from us and to allow us to walk upright. Mm-hmm. But we still have the choice which way to walk, you know. In their case, he says he saved them from slavery so they can be free men again. But, verse 14, if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, and if ye shall despise my statutes, or if your soul abhor my judgments, so that ye will not do all my commandments, but that ye break my covenant, I also will do this unto you. I will even appoint over you terror, consumption, the burning ague, and I shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart. And ye shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemies shall eat it. And I shall set my face against you, and ye shall be slain before your enemies. They that hate you shall reign over you, and ye shall flee when none pursueth you. So that's pretty direct, don't you think? Now, what would cause them with those kind of instructions from God to not do what he told them to do? Lack of faith. Because if you knew that the minute you put your hand out to steal something, it was going to get chopped off, you wouldn't do it. You'd have the faith and not do it. You know, in Saudi Arabia, they get their hands chopped off. Yet they still do it. Why? Because they think they can get away with it. You know, so God's telling them real directly, if you do this, it's all going to be good. If you diss other, then it's all going to be bad. It's your choice. So, we're dealing with the people that God took to the edge of the promised land, and he stopped all of them from going in except Joshua, Caleb, and the ones that were under 20 years old when it happened, which were now close to 60, those particular ones, when they went back in. The ones that were 19, let's say, 40 years later when they go in, they're 59. Of course, they've all had children. They're different ages throughout it. But it's a whole new nation almost that goes into Israel by the time they go. So, but other than Joshua and Caleb and those that are under... and those that are under 20, nobody else was allowed to go in. So Moses dies, and Joshua leads a whole new Israel into the promised land. Let's go to Joshua chapter 1. After what Moses went through, I'm not too sure I'd want to take his place like Joshua did. The leader is not popular. Joshua chapter 1, verse 1. Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise and go into this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness of this Lebanon, unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. Of course, the great sea is the Mediterranean. The Euphrates goes down into what we now know as Iraq. So it's a lot bigger than anything we've ever known them to have. There shall not be any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Be strong and of good courage, for unto this people shalt I divide for an inheritance the land, which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. For the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. That's a pretty good promise. It makes me remember, because there is so much in the Bible where God is trying to prove to us that He's righteous, so that we'll trust Him. And that's what this is all about, too. The promises are amazing if we trust Him. And that's why I think He does take so much time, especially under Paul with us, to explain to us how He can be righteous and do these things. Like with the guys that we meet on Thursday. We just went through that about the righteousness of God and about the area in Romans chapter 11 where he talks about that he had to declare the Jews unrighteous. We were unrighteous. The Jews were supposed to be righteous. He had to declare the Jews unrighteous so he could have mercy on us. Now, why does he go to the bother of telling us that? Because if the Jews were righteous and then he had mercy on us, he would be an unrighteous God. You see what I'm saying? It's like if you had, say, three children and you said, if you do this work here, I'm going to take you to get ice cream. If none of them did, well, first let's say that one of them did the work and two of them didn't. Mm-hmm. And then you took all three to get ice cream. Would you be righteous? No, because only one of them deserved it. That's what you promised. Right, exactly. That's unrighteousness. But how about if none of them did the work, but you forgave them, and you, through grace, invited them all to have ice cream? Who are you being unrighteous against? Nobody, because they were all sinners. And that's what the Lord is kind of saying to us, you know, back then. He's saying the Jews had to be declared sinners so God could show mercy to us. But now that they've been declared sinners, He can also show the same mercy to them that He showed to us. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's really, if you look for the righteousness that God uses to prove how righteous He is, He considers that one of the most important things for us to believe in. Because how else, the lack of that is why the Jews wouldn't go into the Promised Land. It's because they didn't believe that He either would or could do what He told them He was going to do to protect them, you know. Okay, where was I? Joshua chapter 2, verse 1. Rahab and the spies. And Joshua the son of Nun sent out of Shittim two men to spy secretly, saying, go view the land, even Jericho. And they went and came into a harlot's house named Rahab and lodged there. It really is interesting because you run into a lot of Christians that get real stuck up and judgmental. And the Lord makes a big point of counting Rahab in His book, Hebrews, of faithful people, the harlot, you know. So He does a lot of things to try that if Christians really took the time to study it, they wouldn't be judging anybody, you know. So, right. So they went to the house of Rahab and lodged there, and it was told the king of Jericho. Now, that was, those were the, they could have killed the Jews. They were afraid of them. Saying, behold, there came men in hither tonight of the children of Israel to search out the country. And the king of Jericho sent it unto Rahab, saying, bring forth the men that came to thee, which are entered into thine house, for they come to search out all the country. And the woman took the two men and hid them, and said thus, there came men unto me, but I wist not whence they were. I don't know where they are. And it came to pass about the time of shutting the gate, when it was dark, that the men went out. Whither the men went, I wot not. Pursue after them quickly, for ye shall overtake them, she says. But she had brought them up to the roof of the house, and hid them with the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order upon the roof. And the men pursued after them the way to Jordan unto the fords, and as soon as they which pursued after them were gone out, they shut the gate. But before they were laid down, she came up unto them upon the roof. And she said unto the men, I know that the Lord hath given you the land, that your terror is fallen upon you, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when ye came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites that were on the other side Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom ye utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts did melt, neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and in the earth beneath. So do you see how terrible it is that the heathens have more faith in the God of the Jews than the Jews did? The Jews were afraid to go in. The heathens were all scared to death because they knew that the Jews were with God and what He was going to do to them. Mm-hmm. So that they really had more faith than the Jews did. Now therefore I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that ye will also show kindness unto my father's house, and give me a true token. And that ye shall save alive my father and my mother and my brethren and my sisters and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. And the men answered her, our life for yours. If ye utter not this our business, and it shall be when the Lord hath given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with thee. Then she let them down by a cord through the window of her house, which was upon the town wall, and she dwelt upon the wall. And she said unto them, get you to the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you, and hide yourselves there 3 days, until the pursuers be returned, and afterward may ye go your way. And the men said unto her, we will be blameless of this thine oath which thou hast made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, thou shalt bind this line of scarlet thread in the window which thou didst let us down by, and thou shalt bring thy father and thy mother and thy brethren and all thy father's household home unto thee. And it shall be that whosoever shall go out of the doors of thy house into the street, his blood shall be upon his head, and we will be guiltless. And whosoever shall be with thee in the house, his blood shall be on our head, if any hand be upon him. And if thou utter this our business, then we will be quit of thine oath, which thou hast made us to swear. And she said, according unto your words, so be it. And she sent them away, and they departed, and she bound the scarlet line in the window. And they went and came unto the mountain, and abode there 3 days until the pursuers were returned. And the pursuers sought them throughout all the way, but found them not. So the two men returned and descended from the mountain and passed over and came to Joshua the son of Nun and told him all things that befell them. And they said unto Joshua, truly the Lord hath delivered into our hands all the land, for even all the inhabitants of the country do faint because of us. So now we've got, worldly confirmation of some work that God's done. Now, oh yeah, now we can believe because look, they're scared to death of us and they're ready to run, you know. But He is giving God credit for doing that.
I think it's really interesting that Rahab said, I know that the Lord has given me the land.
Right.
She didn't say, it has been said.
Right.
She knew.
She believes it. That's why it says later on in Hebrews, she had faith. She's one of the heroes of faith because she actually had the faith to know.
I kind of think it's cool. It's kind of like Passover, the little deal.
The scarlet thread. Yeah, right. Like the blood on the doorposts,
yeah,
right?
Sense.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, if you're a heathen, you won't have a land to sacrifice, so
you
use it.
So what we do get out of this, though, is God had prepared Jericho in advance, as He said He would. Let's go to Joshua chapter 3, verse 1. And Joshua rose early in the morning, and they removed from Shittim and came to Jordan. He and all the children of Israel, and lodged there before they passed over. That's the Jordan River. And let's go up to 14. And it came to pass, when the people removed from their tents to pass over Jordan, and the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people, and as they that bear the Ark were come into Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the Ark were dipped in the brim of the water, for Jordan overfloweth all his banks all the time of harvest. So it was a bigger river than normal. That the waters which came down from above stood and rose up upon a heap very far from the city Adam, that is, before Zaratan. And those that came down toward the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. It surprised me the first time I read this and thought, wow, there was another parting of another, not sea, but river for them to walk through on dry land. And the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan. And that's where you know it was a miracle. It wasn't on wet ground. It wasn't on muddy ground. It was dry. And all the Israelites passed over on dry land until the people were passed clean over Jordan. And let's go to chapter 5, verse 1. And it came to pass, when all the kings of the Amorites, which were on the side of the Jordan westward, and all the kings of the Canaanites, which were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of Jordan from before the children of Israel until we were passed over, that their heart melted, neither was their spirit in them any more because of the children of Israel.
I have a question.
Yes.
Kind of like when the waters parted from Moses, wasn't that in a way them being baptized or identified with Moses? So maybe they're now being baptized, identified with
Moses. Well, that's a good point. They're definitely being identified with him because now he's the one that's actually taking them into the promised land. So you could look at it that way. Okay, and then 6, chapter 1. Chapter 6, verse 1. Now Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out, none came in. And the Lord said unto Joshua, See, I have given into thine hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor. And ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, and go round about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear before the ark 7 trumpets of ram's horns. And the 7th day ye shall compass the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow with the trumpets. And it shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when they hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down, and the people shall ascend up every man straight before him. So he's not preparing them to fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you can imagine these people that are already scared to death inside this city. They don't know what's going on. It's they're going around and around. You know, they're going to attack pretty soon, but they don't know when. And then come the trumpet and the shout.
And all of that could have happened with the giants.
Of course. That's right.
Yeah.
Under Joshua, the land of Canaan was conquered. And then the land was divided among the 12 tribes of the nation. You know, Israel had 12 tribes, except which tribe?
Levi.
Except the Levites. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 18. Oops. Take just a glance at this. Chapter 18, verses 1 and 2, where Moses is telling in chapter 18, he says, the priests, the Levites, and all the tribe of Levi, because that was the Levite tribe, shall have no part nor inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of the Lord made by fire and his inheritance. Therefore shall they have no inheritance among their brethren. The Lord is their inheritance, as he said unto them. So we're not going to go into a lot of detail on that, but the point is that the reason that the Israelites were supposed to pay a tithe of 10, well, 1 out of every 10 animals and 1 out of 10 on the produce, is because the Levites didn't have any land, and they were the priestly tribe, so this was to take care of them. And then out of what they received, they gave 10%. The Levite tribe, out of what they received, they gave 10% to the priesthood. Mm-hmm. So it's a double, you know, it's 10% of and 10% of that, you know. So, do you think back then they had an income tax?
That was it.
Because there wasn't a separate secular government. It was the government was the priesthood. You know, that was it. Let's go back to Joshua chapter 24. Verse 31. So Joshua took them across, and they conquered the land, or God conquered it, and they divided the land. And in verse 31 it says, "And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua, and which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel." So what does that mean? They're being obedient, right? And so they're getting the blessings of their faith and their obedience. They were in the land, living peaceably with one another and obeying the Lord. And what did that bring them? More blessings. What could go wrong? Right. Judges chapter 2, verse 10. Here's what could go wrong. "And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. And there arose another generation after them which knew not the Lord, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam." I mean, it's just like they, almost like they had an addiction to false gods, you know, to idols. It's just amazing. Anytime they got a chance, there they ran.
No sooner than Moses goes up the hill.
Right. So it didn't pass from that generation, you might say, to the next. It says them and who knew of the works, you know. So, but it happens in to us too. Because I've seen situations where you've got a small church and it was formed by believers. I mean, true believers. And then come the kids. And the kids, some of them, don't like what they see and they rebel against it.
They want a coffee bar.
They want what?
A coffee bar.
Yeah, exactly. And others, they like it, but they don't have faith. They just copy it as a law. They repeat it, a form of godliness, but they're not actually godly.
Well, of course, their parents, because their parents did.
Well, originally, though, their parents were believers. I'm just talking about how it passes from generation to generation, you know. And then there are those who actually believe, like their parents did, and it passes down through them. But that same church, one generation away, is no. If it was a church of pure believers, one generation away is probably a church of one out of three believers. Move it another generation or two, and it's just copiers.
It's kind of like today, they're just not passing the Bible down.
Right. Yeah.
It turns into ritual.
It turns into ritual. How quickly and easily it turns into
ritual. Because their parents did. That's what I was trying to say. It's like, not, they're not going there.
They're going to do what their
parents told them. Oh, right. Exactly. As a ritual. They're going like their parents did. That's right. And part of that is either because the parents didn't believe or because they didn't teach it correctly down to their children, so their children just saw it as a ritual. And that's why you see so many people today that went to church and now wouldn't go again no matter what, because they just saw ritual happening without any meaning underneath the ritual.
And I'm going to murmur some here. And that's something that I don't like about the churches today, where... And some of you may think differently than I do, where they have nurseries, and they always take the kids to the nurseries, drop them off, and come back. I've been in the nursery. Those little kids aren't learning anything about God. They're having a whoopee good time in there. And people think they can just take them to church and turn them over to the church, and they're going to come out as people who believe in God.
Yeah.
Well, back to Israel. In the case of the Israel and the generation that no longer knew about God and what he had done, God gave Israel judges to deal with their ignorant lifestyle. So let's go to Judges chapter 3, verse 5. And the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. I might get that down if I keep reading it. And they took their daughters to be their wives and gave their daughters to be their sons and served their gods. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and forgat the Lord their God and served Balaam and the groves. Therefore the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the land of... Anybody want to volunteer and read that?
Nope.
Cushan Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, and the children of Israel served that guy for 8 years. And when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, and the Lord raised up a deliverer to the children of Israel who delivered them, even Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. And the Spirit of the Lord came unto him, and he judged Israel and went out to war. And the Lord delivered... Don't you have a Bible that tells you how to pronounce that name, Annette?
Yeah, most people
do. Well, go ahead. Let's hear how you pronounce it.
Well, I mean, I'd have to do it 4 or 5 times before I could say it.
Well, just try it once.
Cushan Rishathaim.
Ooh.
That's pretty good for
me. Okay, we'll keep going. King of Mesopotamia into his hand, and his hand prevailed again against... Go ahead, Jenny. Tell us how you pronounce it.
What?
Okay, that was close enough. And the land had rest 40 years, and Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. So now I'm just going to read you, because under the judges, Israel disobeyed, was punished, begged God to forgive them. He forgave them. Disobeyed, forgave, disobeyed, forgave. It just went off and on and off and on. So let's just jump to these verses. Judges chapter 3, verse 12. This is after the 40 years of peace. And the children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. And let's go to chapter 4. He brought another judge to save them that time. But let's go to chapter 4, verse 1. And the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord when Ehud was dead. That was the last judge. So then, again, he turns them over to evil, and then he saves them again. And let's go to chapter 6. Verse 1, and the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. And then Judges chapter 10, it just went on and on and on.
You'd think they'd learn.
Chapter 10, verse 6. And the children of Israel, oh, you knew I was going to say this, didn't you? Did evil again in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam and Asheroth and the gods of Syria and the gods of Zidon and the gods of Moab and the gods of the children of Ammon and the gods of the Philistines and forsook the Lord and served him not. I mean, every time they get punished, every time they get hurt for doing this, and yet they do it again. So what happened because of the evil of Israel, because they just, even though God continually saved them after punishing them, evil, confusion, and civil war reigned during the time of the judges. Punishment and restoration, too. These are God's people. But we're the same way. Only our punishment is spiritual, through natural consequences, not through direct intervention by God. And why doesn't He intervene directly today when we sin?
Don't take
Him
care of
us. What?
Don't take Him care of us.
He does not impute sin against us. He doesn't see it. He doesn't count it. Amazing, isn't it? What the difference is. Yeah. Right, but... But we do get consequences. So we're going to come back to Judges, but jump up to Galatians chapter 6. Whoa, is it this late already? I'm going to have to go faster.
Keep going. Nobody's
going.
It's raining.
That's right. Galatians chapter 6, verse 7, where Paul tells us today Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. So what did I want to ask you about this? What do you think about a Christian who just goes into a sinful lifestyle? Not that all of us don't sin, we do. But our normal mode of operandi is we don't want to, and we feel real bad when we do. And that's why we're tempted to pray to the God and say, please forgive me, even though we know He already has. Yeah. You know? So, but what would be the life of a Christian that didn't go through that and just sternly decided, I want to live my life, I want to wallow in the sinful lifestyle openly?
No. You want to say no blessings, but it's not blessing per se. No
reward.
Well, no spiritual blessing. You're not growing. You're just stagnant.
And at the very least, he would be a miserable Christian.
Yeah.
You know, because he's actually in rebellion against the God that saved him and is going to give him untold blessings in the end.
Yeah, it's like he kind of ramped up the fight between the old man and the new man on the inside.
It's like he got enough faith to believe, but not enough faith to follow Christ. And, of course, there is rewards later.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to get many rewards.
He's going to show up like a plucked chicken.
Like a plucked chicken. That's right. So, all right. Well, let's go back to Judges. We got to wrap this up. Chapter 21. Verse 24. And the children of Israel departed thence at that time, every man to his tribe and to his family, and they went out from thence, every man to his inheritance. In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Now, if they were all godly men, that wouldn't be so bad, would it? Every man doing what was right in his own eyes.
But that ain't none.
Today, in this country, that whole word of tolerance is every man doing what's right in his own eyes. You know, that's the God, I think, above materialism, is I do it my way. I want to do what I want to do. And so the last true judge to these guys back there was Samuel. They tried to appoint some others, but that was it. You can imagine all the things that he had to settle when everybody was doing what was right in their own eyes, what he had to do between people. And again, that's what our country wants. Let me do what I want, and I'll let you do what you want. Only don't tell me what I ought to do. Right? And that's the biggest problem that I see with non-believers, is they want to be the judge of what's right and wrong. So when you tell them, well, no, here's what you got to read. It's right here. If you read this, you'll know what to do. No, I decide what to do. That's the final thing they don't want to give up on, is to actually put another authority over their own heads. Because in this country, we're allowed to a great extent to be our own authorities our whole lives long. But this book doesn't let us be our own authorities. It doesn't tell us we're capable of being our own authorities. So, okay, so much for Judges. Let's go to 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 1. Ooh, I got a lot of reading to do. You know what? I think I'm going to call it right there. We'll stop right there, and we will start the next one at that point. See if I remember how to do this. It's been a whole week.